The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It is Friday the 22nd of May 2026, 4 minutes past nine, and you're very welcome along to The Greg Hughes Show. We've a lot coming up on the programme, lots of different stuff for you. We will be introducing our Friday panel to you very shortly, talking some of the big stories of the day and the week. After 10, we'll preview the podcast that is being released today at 11 a.m. And we'll also be unveiling the winners of the Highland Radio Community Hero Awards. That and so much besides, previewing a very special event which is being organised and taking place on Sunday in Donegal Town. So lots and lots to come, so stay right where you are. Now, before I introduce the Friday panel, I want to go to the Director of Services at Donegal County Council, and that is Gary Martin. Gary, thank you very much for your time and thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, unfortunately, we're speaking in the context of a devastating fire which broke out at Cherry Moor Kitchens in Donegal Town. A huge family business. They've created one of the state-of-the-art facilities, not just in the county, but in the country. And unfortunately, a fire took hold, and it seems the damage has been devastating. Gary, the fire service were called to tackle this blaze. What can you tell us about that call and what ensued?
Yeah, Greg, I suppose, look, all our thoughts are with the McLaughlin family this morning, and indeed all of the employees and all of the suppliers and people connected with Cherry Moor Kitchens. They're a very, very large and important employer in South Donegal. Unfortunately, overnight, we've had a very, very substantial fire at their premises just outside Donegal town. It appears to have started sometime before 10:45 last night when the first 999 call came in. And when the initial brigade responded, the fire had been fairly well established at that stage. They immediately called for further resources, and we had six fire appliances there from Donegal Town, Bindorn, Ballyshannon, Killybegs, Stranorler and Letterkenny. And then some additional special equipment as well, the hydraulic platform from Letterkenny, the instant command vehicle from Letterkenny, and one of our water tankers from Killybegs were also on the scene as well. And I'd also like to acknowledge the great neighbourliness shown by Donegal Waste in Loy's next door. They did a wonderful job in helping us. And sometimes they can be forgotten in the midst of all of this. So they were really wonderful. I just want to acknowledge and thank them on behalf of the council and the fire service for assisting us overnight. And indeed, they still have some resources on the ground there, even as we speak this morning. The fire was well established, given the nature of the business. There's a very, very big fire load with various forms of timber and plywood, etc. And given that it had been established, it took some time to get under control, but it is now under control. We still have three appliances actually on site there at the moment, and they're attempting to, I suppose, damp down the very, I suppose, intense fire that is there, and they'll be there for a number of hours yet to come. As you say, the business is extensively damaged, some of it's actually destroyed, and then there will be other elements of it as well, very, very badly smoke damaged. So I suppose once the dust settles, the owners will be able to see exactly what the situation is on the ground there for them.
Was there any issue that you had to deal with in terms of, you know, chemicals? I'm thinking maybe resins and what have you that might not be present in other fires that the crews had to take particular caution with?
Although, look, so certain fires will have known forms of flammable material that you have to be really, really careful of. The types of material that would generally be in a joinery business would not fall into that category, but nevertheless can be quite flammable, you know, epoxies and resins and so on, so both glues. The big issue, I think, probably on that site was just the sheer volume of the fire load, the type and form of timber that's there that was stacked into the warehouses, obviously, for the use in the day-to-day business. And anytime you have a fire load like that, and if the fire is established, it can be, you know, it's quite time consuming to get it under control.
Okay, listen, Gary, all of your crews in what was a very challenging operation, all of your crews are safe and sound, I hope.
They are, no, and I suppose that's the most important thing of all, Greg. You know, thankfully, We've had no persons reported injured either within the premises or indeed from any of our crews. And I suppose, look, again, just to acknowledge the great work that our fire crews do every day of the week. They don't always get, I suppose, the recognition. Unfortunately, recognition only comes when you have a particularly, I suppose, a particularly escalated incident. They do it every day of the week. But I just want to acknowledge the work that they've done overnight and continue to do there this morning as well.
Thank you, Gary, for sparing the time this morning. That was Director of Services with the Council there, Gary Martin. We appreciate his time today. Our Friday panel this morning, India Kennedy, Campaigns and Events Director with Ogra Fianna Fáil. Good morning to you, India.
Good morning to you, Greg, and good morning to your listeners.
Thanks so much for joining us. We also have John McAteer, editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune newspaper. Thanks for joining us, John.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. In studio with me, former county councillor in the Innishowe Municipal District, Nicholas Crossan. Nicholas, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Greg, and good morning to all the listeners.
I'll start with you, India, with you being from the south of the county. Not unlike myself, you would have seen the establishment of Cherrymore Kitchens and its growth, and I think we all know people that work there. It's absolutely devastating, isn't it, for the family and all those that work there. Such a shocking fire overnight.
Absolutely, Greg. And my thoughts go out to all the workers of Cherrymore. I mean, we've, like yourself, we've drove past it every morning to go to school, and it was such a massive employer in Donegal Town. And I'm so glad that nobody was hurt and nobody was injured, but I hope that they can rebuild and come back stronger as ever.
Yeah, and John, you know, all of us on this conversation, you know, we're familiar with devastating fires, and, you know, in the immediate aftermath, of course, it's the worst thing could ever happen. But what we also know from history is that we can build back bigger and better. And we've seen that on a number of occasions here in our own county.
It's a very, very substantial factory. My own kitchen about 15 years ago when I was refurbishing the house came from Cherrymore. Top class job and top class workers and very good people to deal with them. My thoughts are with them all, and let us hope that they can build it back again in the not too distant future. Yep. It's going to be a very, very big task because the damage seems to be very, very extensive.
Yeah, I think you're right. But we're resilient folks, aren't we, Nicholas?
Oh, certainly, and it's terrible. There are two things that obviously is flood and fire is devastating for any business. Fire obviously being destroying such a business. I guess Cherrymore is known throughout not only Donegal but half of Ireland. Their work is second to none, and let's hope that they can get back up and running again as soon as possible.
Yes, indeed. Now, let's get to some topics here. We've seen more complaints and warnings from local councillors this week that the current active travel roadworks, especially around the hospital roundabout and the Kilmacrennan Road, are too tight for heavy good vehicles and are doomed to fail. Are these daily traffic frustrations completely justified, or are critics failing to see this bigger picture of a post-10T era where the new €800 million bypass infrastructure is designed to take heavy traffic completely out of the town centre and make it a more friendly place for pedestrians and cyclists? John McAteer, I will start with you. Are we failing to see the big picture here, or are these complaints, you know, especially, it can be Letterkenny, but anywhere really, major infrastructural developments, are these complaints justified?
Absolutely, and Melton is the one in our focus at the moment. The whole area around Gamble Square, and most people will know that there, has been completely out of action. There is partial traffic through the place, but not many people going in there because there's huge amounts of work
going on there. Just pull your mic out a little bit. You're covering your mic with your hand, John, sorry.
Me?
I think so, yeah. You're a bit muffled there now. Okay.
Is this?
Yep.
Let me see.
No, you're good there now. Yeah, I think actually we're picking up the mic on your headphones. Carry on.
Right. Letterkenny is an absolute disaster. I use that road several times most weeks, and driving down there the other day, it's just a total disaster. But the overall, just to put some context on this whole plan, it's to remove traffic, it's to remove vehicles, it's to remove people from the centre of towns by 30% between now and 2030. Overall, there's a budget of about $260 billion, and then there's local input from the government itself. So the purpose of it is very, very clear. that just want traffic out of these places. What do you replace them with? People out walking, cycling, greenways. It doesn't add up to common sense, but then again, Brussels has a big hand in this, and a lot of this would have been brought to Brussels by the Green Party when they were there from 94 onwards. I think it's a total folly. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, they're putting in Innermelton on the quay, which is a very busy spot. They're putting in 23 items of furniture to prevent vehicles from parking there. And as I say, this project began before the end of 2024. Should have been finished long ago, but there's another major part of it that hasn't even started yet. So I feel sorry for the business people that have to try and exist there in the meantime, because footfall is a way, way down, because there's no great option but to bypass the town at the moment. And that could go on into the summer and well into the summer. Whether it'll hamper the festival or whether a festival can go ahead somewhere else, I have no idea. And at the festival committee, I've been talking to some of their leaders in the past week, and they've been given no inkling from the council as to whether the next phase of the works on the Shore Road are going to continue. The belief is that everything will continue until it's finished.
What is the end game in Remelton?
The surprising thing about Remelton at the moment is that the town is literally a construction site. Nothing has been finished. Those works ongoing there just a year ago across the quays and across past the town hall and in that whole area. And nothing's been finished. It's cones and barriers and protection everywhere.
All right, OK. Nicholas, do you have sympathy for the people of Letterkenny, or should they be glad that there's such a level of investment and interest in you know, reimagining the shared space?
Look, there is investment out there, but just because there's money there, it doesn't mean that what they're doing is the best value for money on it. And John covered the spaces that we have. I'd just like to give maybe an articulated lorry is 2.55 metres wide, and if you put the mirrors on it, it brings it up to 3 metres. So if two lorries are meeting on the road, that's 6 metres. They're talking about bringing down the carriageway to 6 or 6.5 metres. So that means there's 18 inches, an old money, if we want to call it, for two lorries to pass. That's so in theory and in paper, on paper, this looks great. But it's no way can this work. And I do believe, like, the whole emphasis of the current act of travel is to get us to use our own steam, to get out, walk, cycle, or whatever we want to do. And it's a great idea. But it's not for everybody. And it's not in the right place in Letterkenny, in my opinion, Greg. Mm. I do believe that we have to look after the business end of it, because they're the taxpayers on it. The hospital, how are they going to get their services? We need what Letterkenny needs is an outer relief road, like an M50. But I mean a proper one to go around town that people can circulate, that you're not going to...
But that will come with the 10T. This money was here now.
It's not going to come...
Spend it now or lose it.
That's what I've said. Because the money's there, I think we would have been better to acquire a bit of land or use the land to put in to get an outer relief road in it. Because that is the main one. Can we wait for another 10 years? Can we wait for another 50 years?
The crazy thing is, and I don't think anyone can disagree with this, HGV drivers are saying that the likes of the hospital roundabout there, that they will actually have to go into effectively oncoming traffic to get around it. Now, that is against the rules of the road.
Correct.
So how can we design a road that would compel drivers of certain vehicles to break the rules? That doesn't make sense.
When you put it in paper, Greg, and give the specifications and the radius or the radii of the lorry, then theory, there's no problem. But I've come up today, and actually the last time I was on here, I wasn't on Fanny. I was talking to, I'm just going to divert. It was Councillor McClafferty, and there's a woman says, you were on the radio this morning. I says, I was. Well, the next time you're on, would you tell the people in Letterkenny to put on their indicators? And I was watching, I was observing the day coming round roundabouts. It's like a set of dodgems, so it is. And it would be a help if somebody did put on their
and they're not all BMW drivers.
They're not all BMW. I can assure you they're not all BMW drivers, right? But right. We're going to have to. I do think that the greenways are a great idea, but in the right place. We have to. There's some of the greenways down the country are fabulous attractions.
Indeed, the majority of councillors voted in favour of these works in Letterkenny, and there will be others in different parts of the county as well. Are we failing to see the bigger picture that the future is not gas guzzling massive vehicles around our towns and cities, that it is a blend of obviously some traffic, but people walking safely on their scooters, on their bikes? What do you think?
I think there's two sides to it, Greg. Like, I think obviously more infrastructure is great. It's great to have these cycle paths and these greenways and making it more accessible for people that want to commute to work by bike or by scooter. But you have to think of it logically too. Like, in the middle of November, you're not going to be cycling into Letterkenny and you're on your bike. I was in Letterkenny every second Friday for over a year and a half, and I came through Letterkenny. I have never, ever seen anybody using them footpaths coming into the Polestar roundabout at all. And I've been in the back.
Yeah, you're on about the footpaths.
It's very, very difficult.
Yeah, you're on about the footpaths and cycle lanes there on the four lanes, aren't you? Yeah.
Yeah, but when you come up to Letterkenny, when you come up to the hospital, that road is already tight. And to narrow that even more, it's just going to cause so much mayhem. Like, especially at school times when there's kids coming out of the school up there, it's already traffic congested. Add a couple of lorries, add a couple of ambulances. It's just going to be impossible. So I do think that they need to re-look at the plans on that and maybe add an emergency lane for ambulances or make it wider for lorries, because there is going to be more infrastructure up there. It's a massive hub for infrastructure in Letterkenny. So I do think it needs to be looked at. But it is important to spend the money that we have, but spend it wisely and make it beneficial for everybody. Don't cause more traffic congestions when there already is pressure.
What's the end game in Remelton, John? Just to go back to that, because maybe this will all be worth it when it's completed. Sorry to switch from different regions, but our listeners understand
what we're talking about. As well, there around the Ballyrain, just past the filling station there. That's also a bottleneck. I mean, coming down onto that to turn left, from looking at it the other day, and I had to try and negotiate it with a great care, because there's traffic coming at you from all places and nobody's quite sure where they should be going. It doesn't add up to any common sense at all. But like, as far as the milk is concerned, there doesn't seem to be any end. That project is costing probably north of €8 million euros. We can see a purpose in that the footpaths, and Nicholas would agree with that, most footpaths need upgrading. But to have 2.4 metre footpaths in a Georgian heritage town going back for 200 years doesn't add up. Footpaths are being given priority over everything else. And that doesn't add up to any common sense, because trucks are getting wider, they're getting longer, and they're getting heavier. And like from what I can see in Remelton, it's just been an absolute disaster and a nightmare for the public and for the business people in and around that Gamble Square area and over the Show Road. That's the next part of the project that's going to be done, and nobody knows how or where traffic is going to go, because there seems to be this vision that cars don't need to go into Remelton. How in the hell they're supposed to get in, come up the Swilly in a canoe or something like that? This is the kind of thinking that's going on around official Ireland. It's madness personified, and there's something schizophrenic about the whole thinking that seems to go into it, that we're going to straighten this out, traffic is going to be moved out of here, and where it goes is none of our business. Remelton must be one of the few towns in Ireland that doesn't have a car park, and there's no plan to ever have one. I mean, how could that make any sense? Okay. Remelton is a very busy hub in the morning time. Market day on Thursday, it's busy, it's brilliant, it's chaotic. But I mean, this is going to stop all that. And I mean, there's no point in saying otherwise. Does the council have any plan to sort of reimburse those who are out of pocket? No, they haven't, because that's not part of this 260 million a year or 360 million a year that we're getting into the country.
All right.
And this is going to go on and on and on until every town and village in Donegal is visited. Should that take 50 years, because that's the EU policy?
Okay, I'm playing devil's advocate here, if that's all right, Nicholas. Like, I'm thinking in your area, you know, people have been campaigning for ages and seeking the redevelopment of the shorefront and Buncrana.
Yeah.
Are we going to get the same thing when that work begins? Are we too quick? And this is in no way disrespect John or India or anyone else for that matter, but it's just to try and tease it out. You know, do we seek investment? Do we say why isn't money being spent in an area? And then when it is, we give out, like, are we going to hear the same complaints from Buncrana, I wonder, that work eventually starts?
I hear what you're saying.
Because Donegal Town was the same. They went in and they changed the road layouts, they created new footpaths and tried to improve the flow of the town. That was criticised. Letterkenny's being criticised. Remelton's being criticised. Or are we just getting the planning completely wrong?
Well, I think that the latter point there, we're getting the planning completely wrong. The 10T's coming now. What should be incorporated in that there is the business park to bring the industry. Letterkenny is going to attract industry over the coming years, but it doesn't have to be in the centre in the town or the outskirts. That should be built out on the Ballybuffet Road or the Buncrana Road, where people have an equal opportunity to get to their work in the morning without sitting half an hour in traffic. But one point was, we didn't learn from what happened in Dublin. The Googles and the Intels and Apples were all put on the east Link Bridge there in Dublin, where they're going over it. People can't get on. There's nowhere to live, so they must commute. There's nothing on the east side of them, only water. So there's only one road in and one road out. The children's hospital, I mean, to build that in the centre of Dublin was absolutely crazy. So why don't we plan now to say that we'll put a business park, a decent business park, on the 10T that people can get access, the road's going to be there, and take, rather than prevention, rather than taking everybody into Letterkenny, give us the cure beforehand that your work is outside Letterkenny.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. Thank you very much for that. Some of the comments coming in before we take our first break, all of you in agreement, but this texter really does wrap it up quite well. It's devastating to see what's happened to Cherrymore Kitchens last night. The loss to the community will be great. Many people will have fitted kitchens ordered, or worse, perhaps ready for delivery. I only hope that out of these ashes, a greater phoenix will rise. On the roads, it's a complete disaster what the council are doing to our roads. Well, some of it's TII, and not as much of it is the council, but some of it is, of course. In Carndonagh, they took away the turning right lane heading to Mallintown. Now the traffic's building up because of this. What are they thinking? Instead of freeing up traffic, they're causing gridlock. And another caller says the proposed bypass, or the proposed route for the bypass, would appear to be going through a number of housing estates. These estates are currently full of defective blocks. So houses being built with government grant money will have to be bought under CPO to demolish for this road. Is this correct? I'm not really quite sure that is correct. But the plans are out there, and I don't recall any mention of the bypass going through housing estates, but that's not to say that you're not right either. We are in the company of India Kennedy, Nicholas Crossan and John McAteer, and you, wherever you're listening, we really do appreciate it. Now, voters are hitting the polling stations today in Dublin Central and Galway West for two crucial by-elections, with campaigns dominated by hard-hitting local and national issues, specifically housing, the cost of living, immigration and regional infrastructure. The question is, what do today's votes tell us about the real national mood? And looking at the bigger picture, how will these results impact the stability of the coalition government and the ultimate timing of the next general election, if at all? Now, this is, I'm not going to lie, something, even though I've brought this up, that I have been tracking very, very closely. But I know Nicholas has, because he's only been down blooming canvassing down there, right? So, Nicholas, the significance in your view of these two by-elections?
Well, you know me, like John McAteer, I'm addicted to elections and
but
counts.
So is India, by the way.
And India as well, sorry.
Don't leave the two young ones out.
Well, I know.
Am I right, India?
Well,
this old fart forgetting about me and you, these young ones. Stop it.
I was sorry.
I was being young, Greg.
And I was counting myself as a young as well, but Greg was... I was in Galway West canvassing for an independent councillor, Tom Welby. Now, there are other independents as well, but... I think the lie of the land down there is Fine Gael is going to look very, very close in taking that seat. It's a 2-3 horse race. It's a Fine Gael seat or an independent. Senator Kane is it's a personal vote for Fine Gael, I would say. Mm-hmm. It's not showing national vote on it. And another thing, Andy, you're not like this, but Fianna Fáil are going to take a hammering. Mm-hmm. I mean, a hammering on the doors. I don't know if it's the wrong candidate or the wrong time for Fianna Fáil. But I can assure you in Galway West, Fianna Fáil is not going to be at the races, and it's going to be...
But do you think that is a local phenomenon, or is it a holding a mirror up maybe to the national picture?
Holding the mirror up to the national paper, right. I think, because on the door, there isn't on the doors now, and I have no axe to grind with anybody down there, but I was just listening very... I actually met three Donegal people when I was and living in houses down there when I was talking. But... It's going to be very, very difficult for Fianna Fáil to show. And that's where Fine Gael, how are Fine Gael going to do it? So it has to be a personal vote for Sean Kane. Dublin Central, Sinn Féin is going to be the big loser here, although they're showing well in the polls. I don't see where their transfers are going to come from. It's going to be a severe slap in the teeth for Mary Lou.
Because it's her constituency. Yeah. Who's likely to get the nod down there?
In Dublin, Southend should take that seat. I'm looking at it, and I know Sinn Féin's ahead in the polls, but this is all about transfers. This is a first past the post, really, if you can, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I get you.
There's a lot of counting to be done on it, but that's the way I see it at the moment. Fine Gael are an independent for Galway West and the Southend for
India. How closely do you think, you know, the government HQs will be watching the outcomes of these by-elections?
Oh, I would say very eagerly. I mean, Killian Keane down in Galway West, he has massive support from HQ. Like, they really put their shoulder to the wheel for him. And I think it's unfortunate. Like, I know Killian personally. He's a great guy. I think it's maybe a case of right candidate, wrong time. I think this is going to be a very difficult election nationwide for Fianna Fáil. And I think that'll show in the polls. But I do think it's going to be a difficult election as well for Sinn Féin. I think they're starting to lose momentum, and people are starting to see past their kind of empty promises situation. So it is going to be a very difficult election, but it's definitely going to be an election. Galway West is definitely going to be a Fine Gael independent election, but Dublin's going to be a different ballgame, I would say.
Does this reflect on Micheál Martin? Should he not be in a position where he can sort of ride in and sort of motivate the local voters and get his man over the line, at least in Galway? Like, is this another negative reflection on him?
I don't think it's a specific negative reflection on him. I mean, he was down with Killian Canvas and he's done his best. He was with John Stevens Canvas, and I think it's a general consensus of an anti-government. Like, people are very anti-government at the minute. And I think that's why Fianna Fáil isn't going to do well in the polls.
John McAteer, how closely will you be tracking events?
Every last voter on the TV. It's going to be like, it's an interesting campaign there. Dominic Ennis is looking quite good in Dublin there. Janice Boylan is out ahead by a small margin. Remember, there's only been one poll. We would have needed a poll earlier on this week. The TG Carr poll, the week before this one. I suppose Galway is a very mixed constituency, because the whole hinterland of Galway City, on out across the Gaeltacht area of Connemara, and back up to the very top of the constituency. It's a huge, big, big area, and a very diverse area. Sean Kane will be favourite there. He's been in politics in Galway. He's been in the Dáil since 2011. Lost his seat, got it back, is in the Senate again. Popular. It's a personal vote that he's getting. And that's what politicians who are in the Dáil a long time will get a personal vote. It'll be interesting to see, is it good enough? Will Noel Thomas of Independent Ireland pick up a lot more preference along the way? We're not clear on that, but it's all going to be decided on all the preferences of right up to 9 and 10. So you could have a very, very long count. But the significant thing to look out for in both constituencies, the low poll. If there's a low poll, it'll benefit government parties much more.
Well, what does it say? Does it say anything about Sinn Féin? Mary Lou McDonald's backyard, the biggest party in opposition. Is there an identity crisis for Sinn Féin at the moment? Do you think, John McAteer? And I don't mean this badly, and it is for the purpose of the conversation. Yeah, but Sinn Féin's going to be looking at this. They promise everything.
They will look at it.
more intensely than anyone else, because Janice Boylan would be expected to take that seat comfortably. It just doesn't work that way in by-elections, because the level of transfer, there's only one seat up for grabs, and really effectively it's 50% plus one of the electorate that's going to get you there, or the last one standing. A very, very big field. Strong left wing. Daniel Ennis of Social Democrats is very strong there. All of the parties, the Labour candidate will be in there. Her votes will have a huge will have a huge sense of direction there, and it's a mix of a very wealthy part of town and of poverty. There's poverty endemic. Mm. Housing crisis is huge in that part of the city.
And who's most likely to vote? Because that's not insignificant.
Yeah, all of those things are going to play into that. Jared Hutch, of course, is the unknown factor. Every media source halfway around Europe has been out on his canvas, and they can't quite figure out what he's at. He's doing a very old-style campaign. Back in the days of 50 years ago, he arrives into an estate with a large number of people, loudspeaker vans, and he talks about into a megaphone, but he's mainly handing out leaflets, listening to everybody. Everybody wants a selfie with him, and he's promising nothing, only to do his best. So, Danny, he can't get that seat, I don't think, because if he does, then politics has changed a lot in Dublin.
Yeah, what do you think this could mean for Sinn Féin, Nicholas?
What you said yourself, Greg, Sinn Féin has lost its identity.
I don't mean to have a go, but like it would be fantastic. But you know, if Sinn Féin are in power, DCB end-to-end sorted, hospital crisis sorted, fishermen to be looked after.
More nurses.
Taxes to come down.
Yes.
You know, the promise list is very, very extensive. And I'm not saying they wouldn't deliver that, but I'm just wondering, does the electorate look on and go, okay, well, is that even doable?
Well, there's only one way all those things can be achieved, is that's taxation. And if Sinn Féin gets in, as Michael O'Leary says, if they get in, he's leaving. You know,
But they say that.
Yeah, I know that. But he said a whole lot of things. But there's one thing about Sinn Féin. I think Sinn Féin has lost its identity. You can't keep going on and on promising. You can keep on promising if you're going to be a hurler in the ditch. Because I don't see, obviously, since 1977, there hasn't been an overall majority in Ireland. And probably not for a long time to come will there ever be an overall majority. So there's going to be compromise all the time with coalition governments. Sinn Féin were, supposed looked at, because Labour had lost its focus 20 years ago, that Sinn Féin come along, that they were the main left party. But they're not a left party anymore. They've gone right, probably right of centre.
But all politics has.
It probably has gone. You know, for people sitting down saying we're left, you really have to sit back and say to yourself, you're not a left person, you know, as Ryan, or not Ryan, but as Roy Keane calls them, the prawn cocktail, you know,
prawn
the prawn sandwich
brigade.
You know, you're realistically speaking, when they're sitting in Dáil Éireann and you're drawing down a salary of 120, 130,000 a year plus committees and plus this, you know, just a small fact, and this is what I can't get my head around, Greg, the whip of any party, so. And we'll take it, I'm not here to crucify anybody, but part of me is in my own town. The whip of a party gets 20,000 odds a year, £400 per week for being a whip of a party out of taxpayers' money. It is ludicrous when you think about it. There's some people working their life and they're not earning 20 grand, you know. So We have to sit down and think, and I think that a lot of the politicians have lost the focus on it. They're saying they're here to serve the country. I would question that.
Okay.
I would say that individually they are here to do the very best at an individual level. Like in Sinn Féin's position, they're the main party of opposition.
Don, could you just rotate that microphone? Rotate it slightly. Yeah, try that.
Is there something wrong with it?
No, it's perfect now. You see, you're not speaking into the sweet spot. Go ahead.
Right. The sweet spot. Where in the hell is this now? Sinn Féin is the main party in opposition. Parties in opposition don't have any input or say. They can put down motions of no confidence. They can criticise and they can do all of these things. But
people get used to the same rhetoric. The government can promise at budget time and they deliver a hell of an amount. Already this year, government expenditure, the maximum threshold for government spending this year is 6%. Already, we're not halfway through the year. They're up at 8.9%. And what do you see when the budget comes? There's going to be more expenditure, and all the regulations about expenditure will be just go out the window, because from this year on, they'll be in the process of buying the election.
That's very cynical.
And this is what's happened. This is what's been happening here. Mm, if you put enough goodies into people's pockets under social protection and all of these things, why would people not vote for you? The opposition can't promise and deliver anything. They can promise the sun, the moon, and the stars, but the fact is that they can't deliver. So that takes us back to the by-election. Will the by-election have any great impact on the national scene? Probably not. Micheál Martin will probably come under a bit of scrutiny, given that he has now blown out the 100 candles on the birthday cake. Fianna Fáil is going to do very, very badly. When you see their candidate in Dublin on 7% and the Hutch is on 14%, that asks questions of the body politic and it asks very serious questions.
But just in relation to that, India, can I put it to you? You know, everything that we've talked about now, whether you're pro Fianna Fáil, anti Fianna Fáil, pro Fine Gael, anti Fine Gael, pro Sinn Féin, you know, I think really the public's attitude is not who votes, it's who doesn't vote. And I'll tell you, if a party comes along that people feel really could deliver, and it could be one of the existing parties or what have you, you'd see an extra 10-15% in voter turnout, more engagement and excitement. I think the most interesting cohort for me in this country are those that don't vote. And everything we've talked about now really would be the reasons why they don't.
Yeah, I agree with you, Greg. But I think that, in my opinion anyway, the people that are most vocal about the government and the shape of the government and the shape of the country, they're the ones that don't vote because they don't think their vote is beneficial. Like, I've been involved in elections where there was 27 votes. He was missing 27 votes. And I spoke to people in the days after it and they said, you know, this is wrong. Oh, he should have got in. And I said, did you vote? And they said, but sure, my vote's not going to make a difference. I don't think you can have an accurate opinion on the government and on the shape of the country if you don't vote.
I think that's how you're going to change things if you're going to use your vote.
You have a right to change things.
I disagree a little bit because I think people not voting is them saying there's nothing there for me to vote for, and you know, they don't care whether they influence it or not because they believe whomever they might get into government are all fundamentally the same. And that's why I'm talking of this, the importance of those that don't vote.
Like, people think in their protesting by not voting, they're just causing more damage to themselves. They're not causing damage to the parties that they don't want to get in. If anything, they're helping them.
Right. What do you think, Nicholas, before the break?
I think the person that didn't vote was the person who come out on the presidential elect and did vote and spoiled their vote. That is the person that have to be listened to. And I think if the bigger parties are not listening to those people, they're in serious bother.
A caller says, I hope Gerry Hutch wins a Dáil seat. If we're going to be run by gangsters, well, you can finish off the rest of that too. It's a terrible indictment of politics, though, if that's the case, considering the devastation that's been caused around this country by certain people. About time to bypass Letterkenny and Ballybuffet. Them cycle lanes are a nightmare. I have to go to hospital 3 days a week as a patient, come up with overhead walkways. Greg, Lurgy Brack closed yesterday evening. Town was gridlocked. Seriously needs a plan B. Well, that plan B is 10T. That road wouldn't actually even be the main road into Letterkenny post 10T. Another, an overhead walk and cycle bridge would have been better at the hospital in Ballyrain. No room for emergency vehicles. Some stupid designs going on there. Letterkenny's absolutely disgraceful, says another. Can you imagine what tourists must think when they arrive in town? Not to mention the people trying to manoeuvre through it every day. The bicycle lanes are wider than the traffic lanes. I don't know what size of bicycles they think cyclists are riding. Remelton is ruined too. Used to be a lovely area to walk and now it is a building site. Another, there was a job done in Fintown. Crazy wide footpath. You could land a plane on it. Yeah. I just wonder in I just wonder, India, in 30 years, are we all going to sort of think we were narrow-minded and laugh at ourselves for not seeing the bigger picture? And I want to try and bring as much balance as I can to this as possible. Maybe we won't.
I don't think so. I don't think we were being narrow-minded. I mean, there was a massive lack of public consultations on things like this. And you mentioned earlier about Donegal Town and the one-way system and how people were complaining about that. They still are complaining about it because there's still a massive traffic congestion in it. Like, I'm here from Brussels. I'm living in Brussels now. There's cycle lanes, there's bus lanes, there's traffic lanes, there's underpasses, there's overpasses, but there's never a massive issue. Like, the traffic relatively flowing.
Right, but,
and I think the biggest issue is the planning. I
but
think
India,
the issue is
we're basing
Letterkenny off models from Ballina, we're basing Donegal Town off models from Westport. I think it needs to stop being a one-size-fits-all module. It needs to be specific to the town itself and the needs of the town.
Would you not agree Brussels is a mess, though? There are scooters lying all over the place, bikes lying all over the place. Maybe they've tidied it up since I was there yet, but just scooters lying on footpaths, not as many bikes as the infrastructure possibly could support. Maybe I'm not seeing the bigger picture. Is that not what Brussels is like?
Well, no, now there's lanes to lie the scooters beside the footpaths, so they're not on the footpaths anymore. But there is a lot of cycle lanes. Now, they're a lot faster in Donegal Town with building an infrastructure than they are in Brussels there. But I think generally the infrastructure in Brussels, it's kind of given me a different perspective on how we look at things in Donegal. But I wouldn't say we're narrow-minded.
All right. Okay.
I just think there's a lack of planning.
I get you. Very impressed with that young woman. Is that India Kennedy? She'd have my vote.
No.
I think that we all know where that's come from.
Love mammy.
Greg, ask them strong Fianna Fáil talkers what they think of Eileen Flynn yesterday evening. I didn't. I'm not sure what that's a reference to be honest. I didn't hear any comments from Eileen Flynn. This is going to be a question, and it's pretty much just like a minute each, if that's okay. And it's in relation to the government voting down the People Before Profit sanctions bill this week, arguing the unilateral economic sanctions violate EU trade law. Given that Ireland has intervened in South Africa's genocide case at the ICJ and consistently uses strong rhetoric against Israel's actions in Gaza, does the government's preferred option of waiting for an unlikely EU-wide consensus make our foreign policy look contradictory? Or, John McAteer, is it simply a pragmatic recognition of the legal realities?
We have to toe the line in alongside European law. We dare do nothing or say nothing that might offend Donald Trump in case he imposes more sanctions on us, which is likely to happen. So we are a very benign player in this whole thing. The EU is also a very benign player because they are afraid of their lives, what Trump might do next, and with every good reason. And that would be my comment on it. Like, it's probably a very good motion to impose sanctions on Israel. Israel is doing whatever in the hell they like, and to hell with free speech and free movement. We saw that in the flotilla. The Israel's behaviour, it is effectively genocide, and it's absolutely quite shocking. We're just watching on Sky the other night there, where one of their reporters finally got to that school in southern Iran where the devastation happened way back at the beginning of the war, and 120 children at least were killed. So we have to sit and watch that and just hope for the best, because we have absolutely no say in it, and neither has our government.
Okay, Nicholas, what do you think? I mean, it just talks really, there's almost an acceptance of the power and influence of Israel, I think, on global politics there in John's response. I don't think I'm putting words in his mouth in saying that.
But I agree with whatever John said. I agree with him. I'm not going to rehash it and overstep for time.
Yep.
But it's one of the most complex questions probably that was on the show in a long time, Greg. You know what I mean? And it doesn't say yes or no. The populist answer would be say yes and impose sanctions and all like that. But I'm sure the government, they said that they were going to do the Occupied Territories Bill before they raised it in the summertime. So that's only a few weeks. But I would say it'll be a watered-down version of what was in front of them then. The legalities, they're going to get that sorted out with the AG, the Attorney General. But what we have to work out too, and people say, oh, you're this business. There are 4,900 people working in Leixlip. most of their components come in from Israel.
Mm.
And that's, you know, the corporation tax that they're paying. And I know it's terrible to put in money in front of this, but we have to. But what we went through in 1983 with South Africa, Ireland is a totally, totally different place to what we are now. We're a small country.
But maybe you need to rip that plaster off, though. I think in 30 or 40 years, when the history is written, they won't look favourably back on a comment like you've just made. And that's no criticism
of you.
No.
I know. But I'm here just to give a balance. Yeah. But if it was my thing, you have to, the sanctions will have to go on.
Okay.
What effect they will have is going to be very minuscule, but they will. And the way the people in the flotilla was treated was
horrendous.
Terrible.
India, sorry to rush you. A brief comment from you, please.
No problem. I mean, as well as Nicola said, like it's great to see that the 12 activists have been returned home safe and well. I think Ireland isn't passive here. Like, we are one of the most vocal countries in Europe on Gaza. But if you want sanctions with real economic impact, I think you need Europe moving together rather than Ireland just acting alone, because it's not going to last. It's not going to be sustainable. It is obviously you have to be moral about this, but you also have to be realistic.
Okay.
And if there's no point in putting forward a bill that's not going to sustain in the International Court of Justice.
Understood.
It's not there's a moral complex, but there's also a realistic complex that Ireland acting alone is not going to work with this.
Okay.
But Ireland acting as a vocal voice in Europe is the only way that's going to sustain it.
India Kennedy, thank you very much for joining us. I really do appreciate your time. Look after yourself. Always a pleasure
to
have you on. John McAteer, thanks very much. We love having you on. That's why we keep inviting you.
Thank you very much indeed. It's so, so nice of you to say that.
Love you too. And Nicholas, you know yourself, we love having you on too.
Thanks very much indeed. Appreciate
thanks
that.
For
thanks.
Calling in.
Where the conversation starts, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Now, as you've been hearing on this show and as we reported in the news, there was a devastating fire overnight at the headquarters of Cherrymore Kitchens in Donegal Town. Now, Cherrymore Kitchens and Bedrooms have released a statement as an update for not just their customers, but their community as well. And it reads, "Regrettably, an overnight fire occurred at our headquarters. As a result, our Donegal Town premises will remain closed while we assess the extent of the damage. Most importantly, we want to reassure everyone that no personnel were on site at the time and everyone is safe. We would like to extend our sincere thanks to the emergency services for their swift response. We also want to voice our immense gratitude to our neighbour Shane and all the team at Donegal Waste for their incredible support during this incident. Thank you to our wider community," they say, "for your ongoing patience as we work through this, and we will keep you updated on our progress." Right, now, coming up later in this hour, Sean Quinn will be joining us as we unveil Highland Radio's Community Hero Award winners. He and the team were out surprising some people over recent days. We've got those videos and the audio for you. So actually, it's really quite visual if you want to watch the show. Don't forget, we stream every single morning on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. So you can watch us on your mobile devices or your smart TV or Fire Stick or Google devices, I have. Or you can watch us across Facebook as well. Now, every Friday morning at 11 a.m, we release the sister podcast of this show. It's called The Greg Hughes Podcast. And we've had some amazing guests over the last number of months, some really interesting conversations. And those podcasts are released, of course, on highlandradio.com, and it will go live at 11 for you to listen to whenever you like, and also on Spotify and on Apple Podcasts as well. So if you're listening on the latter two, please give us a like, a subscribe, leave a comment, a rating. It would be really appreciative. Now, we've had a huge reaction to this week's podcast. It hasn't gone out yet, but we did post a clip, and the guest is our very own Joe Dex. You know Joe. He's been at Highland Radio forever, it might seem. But he's very popular, of course, very well liked, not just here at Highland, but right across Letterkenny and beyond. But Joe has had his troubles with alcohol. He is an alcoholic. And he's 3 years sober now, but obviously he still defines himself as such. But he's 3 years sober now and doing well. And I sat down with him during the week for a conversation to hear his story, which is not exactly the story that you hear about alcoholism all of the time. There are differences in his story. Now, I'm going to play you a clip just to give you an idea of what you can expect at 11 o'clock. And we pick up the conversation. Joe was in rehab three times, and his first session in rehab, he just had a very serious seizure. And he ended up in hospital. And this is him talking about that first stint in rehab.
After that first one, I spent the week in hospital. It was decided Coon Mhuire and Galway was brought up. I didn't know anything about this place.
So how did you get to the fact then that this was an alcohol-caused seizure? You know, everyone around you knew, the doctors knew then, obviously, that...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's different, like, it's different when it's your family and the likes of you telling you kind of what you already know. But that was a massive scare for me. Like, that was something that, like, that was a life-changing moment for me. This is not like someone coming up to, oh, you drink too much, Joe. You were drunk last night, Joe. I didn't mind hearing that. That was whatever. I'm going to just drink anyway. But when something like that happens, like... Even at my worst, at my height of drinking, I was thinking to myself, right, maybe I need to do something. So as I say, Coon Mhuire was mentioned in Galway.
That is a, how would you describe that? That's a addiction centre?
Treatment centre, but it's also a detox centre as well. So I didn't know this at the time, but it's 3 months. 12 weeks.
I was just fascinated before we get to that to know what the week in hospital was like without booze.
Well, I was on a drip and I was on Librium. Anyone that has alcohol addiction will know what Librium is. It's a, I don't actually know what it does, but it's given to addicts for alcohol withdrawal. So that was kind of a bit of a, it was just a week lying in bed and on a drip and taking Librium. And I think I remember at the time, like, I can't wait to get out of here to have a drink. I was probably thinking that.
So you weren't open to Galway at that point?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It was mentioned, as I said, and at the time I didn't know anything about the place. I says, you know what, I was thinking it was maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks. I was like,
3 months.
But I said, no bother, I'll go there. I'll shut these people up. I'll just go. Not knowing it was 3 months until maybe 2 weeks before it. And when I heard that, I was like, oh my God. But I was just given ultimatums. Like, it was, if you don't go here, you're not welcome in the house, which is totally fair.
So you did the 3 months?
I did the three months.
I'm just wondering, because you were there how many times?
Twice.
Right. I'm just wondering, because we talked earlier on about sort of this intense control to almost prove to you that you don't have a problem or you're in control of drink.
Mm.
And you can talk us through that 3 months as much as you want to, but I wonder, was that just another opportunity for you to say to your mum and the ones that love you, hey, you think I've got a drink problem? If I had a drink problem, could I go down to Galway and not drink for 3 months, please?
That's exactly was part of my thinking. I was going there to show them that I could do it, and... But at the same time, I was going there to shut them up, and I was going there with the intention of coming back out and saying, see, I done that, now let me have pints at the weekend. You're allowed to make phone calls in there. I think it's like twice a week. I remember in my second month in there, being on the phone to my mum saying, I think I'm all right. Like, I think this is going well. I am... going to be able to have a glass of wine with my dinner when I get out, or maybe I'll just have a couple of beers at the weekend. So that'll be great. Thinking in my head that
you had control now, yeah.
Thinking I'm grand, and if you could hear my mum on the phone, what? Like the what that I heard back, and I was like, oh, here we go again. Thing? Like,
let me ask though. See that you can leave. You can leave whenever you like, can you?
Mm-hmm.
You can. So in other words, if you said stuff this, I've had enough.
Yeah.
So there was enough of you in there that wanted to do this for whatever reason. But, like, were you an outlier in that the penny hadn't dropped after being there for 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah, I was there.
Were you saying this at the any counselling sessions?
No, no, I was playing the game. I was telling them what they wanted to hear. I was being honest, like, in fact, I was being honest with them. I told them everything that happened with the seizures and the drinking, like all the drinking. I wasn't lying, but at the same time, I knew by saying what needed to be said that it would look good on me for the family meetings, which were, I think, they're.
And what? You were warming your mum up on that phone call. You were.
Oh, exactly. Her. I was like planting seeds, thinking maybe he's not too bad. And at the same time, I was thinking about my brother and like my group of friends too. In my head, they were all thinking, sure, Joe's grand. He's never fallen about drunk. He's never getting in the fence. Mm-hmm. He's never bothered with the guys. They didn't see the Joe that was sitting at the house drinking a bottle of vodka every night.
And others did, yeah.
Exactly. So when the first family meeting happened, my mum brought up this phone call about, during the meeting, you're sitting with your counsellor and your whatever family members come. For me, it was my brother and my mum. And she brought up this. He just told me on the phone the other night that he's going to be able to have a glass of wine with dinner and a few Heineken at the weekend. And me thinking my brother would have me back, like, as in to say, "Ah, sure, he's grand. Like, we'll be out with him all the time. He's grand." Well, he basically ate me alive in there as well. Like, and that was a big moment for me as well, when both of them and the counsellor looked at me as if to say,
"Is this guy mad?
You are." They call it insanity. Like, it's called, like, alcoholism.
Alcoholism is a form of insanity, no doubt. The podcast available for you in its entirety from 11. That was a video of the podcast. The audio's a little bit poppy, but it's perfectly fine for the audio of the podcast, just in case you're an audiophobe. Right, so thanks again to Joe. That is a conversation that will benefit people. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And also maybe benefit people that are peers of Joe's and might find it more relatable than perhaps other stories of alcoholism that we do here, though all of them are incredibly valid and powerful. But I hope you understand what I'm trying to say there. Right, that's live for you, available to listen to whenever you like, from 11 o'clock on Spotify, iTunes and on the Highland Radio website. After the break, we're going to be previewing a very special event that has been organised for Donegal Town this Sunday. Now, you will be aware of Aaron Langan. He's a wonderful young lad from Lahey in the south of this county, and he suffers with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. It's a devastating and progressive muscle wasting condition. There is a treatment that has been approved on an EU level, and this issue has been raised extensively in the Shannon, in the Dáil, in the last number of weeks, and we continue to make inquiries to the Department of Health, the Minister for Health as well, because the Department of Health tell us that they are currently in advanced negotiations with the company behind this medicine. Time, though, is of the essence, because you have to have a certain mobility before you can receive this drug. And whilst you're not receiving this drug, your condition can worsen. And that is why it's so pressing. Aaron is one of at least three young lads in Donegal who are affected by this condition and are waiting incredibly patiently, it has to be said, for the approval of this drug. Now, to continue to raise awareness, there is a very important event taking place in Donegal Town on Sunday evening. I'm joined now on the programme by Aideen McDade, who's principal at St Eunan's National School in Lahey. Aideen, thanks so much for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you for having me on the show.
Before we talk about this event, I know that Aaron is an incredibly important part of the wider community, of course, but certainly your school community.
Absolutely, Greg. Aaron is an amazing boy, you know, and we all love him dearly. And for us, it's such a struggle, you know, to see what he's going through. You know, and we feel so frustrated and so helpless that we can't help this child, you know. So we've decided to host an awareness show this weekend on Sunday to help create awareness in our county and beyond, to try and help and support Aaron and all the boys, you know, who are living with this condition, to try and send a clear and strong message to our government that these boys need this drug immediately. And I can definitely see for Aaron. I can see, you know, in school, we can see how he is deteriorating, you know, over a short period of time. And you would say that soul destroying is an understatement.
Yes, and just, you know, so listeners are aware, 8 or 9 months ago, Aaron's parents and others were down at the Dáil trying to pressure the government into fast-tracking the approval of this drug or finding a way to get this drug to those that qualify for it and then sort out some sort of system. It couldn't be beyond them. Since that, Aaron now has to use a wheelchair, and that underlines the time-sensitive nature of this situation, and as that's incredibly difficult for his family, but also for you and your staff and the other students to see this before your eyes, when there is a drug there that potentially could help slow this down.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the frustrating part. You know, there is something out there that could help him, and we know it's not going to cure him, but yet it would be a life-changing drug for him, and it would slow his condition down so that he'd be able to live, you know, a good life, you know, and you know, live his childhood as best he can with the condition.
Now, you have gotten an Ore on board. Now, it's not a concert, but it is a very important gathering in the Diamond in Donegal Town. It's at 5 p.m. And, you know, an Ore are now an internationally recognised act, but they never forget their roots being in and around Donegal Town. It's wonderful that they've come on board with this.
Absolutely. I mean, we're truly blessed, you know, to have an Ore. They're an incredibly talented band, and, you know, they kindly offered their time and talent to support this very, you know, urgent cause. And I have to say, you know, this has come very quickly, only in a matter of days. And they really have gone above and beyond to support Aaron and all the boys with this condition, to help create awareness and to gain, you know, access to that much needed drug, Juvenistat, you know. And I suppose between themselves and ourselves here at St. Eunan's, you know, we want to send out that clear message. You know, Aaron needs this drug immediately. And it's really as simple as that. You know, yeah. Time is ticking.
And for Aaron and the other boys, there comes a point whereby they can no longer qualify for access to this drug. It's very important, Aideen, I think, because I presume there'll be cameras there. Hopefully there's a drone there. The more people that turn out, and that information will find its way by hook or by crook to the Minister for Health, the more people that turn out, the more difficult it is to ignore these calls, because this potentially is many thousands of a community coming together in the centre of Donegal Town to send a very strong message. There is real potential here with this event, I think.
Absolutely. And Greg, there's no doubt about it. You know, hope grows stronger when people come together. You know, I see Aaron, and we see so much of his condition within school on a daily basis, but, you know, outside that, at home, what his parents have to deal with, and, you know, none of us know or could even come to understand, you know, what they have to deal with. And these families, Aaron's family and all the other families with boys, you know, dealing with this condition, they need our help. They need our strength. Do you know what I mean? To fight for them, you know, to get this much needed drug. Yeah.
The location is Donegal Town. It's Sunday, the 24th of May, 2026 at 5 p.m. Weather's not going to be an excuse. It's just whether or not you want to become involved in supporting Aaron, the other lads, their families, the wider community. We heard of one family who's one of the sons has DMD and is able to get or has had access through a trial program to this drug in Northern Ireland, and his brother can't get this drug. I mean, you know, that's a separate family. That's what this comes down to. It's absolutely crazy. It's embarrassing that we're having to do this to try and embarrass or pressure the state to do the right thing here. But here's where we're at. Aideen, thank you very much for your time. It is greatly appreciated. I do appreciate you taking time out of the busy school day. And I do hope there's a superb turnout on Sunday.
And Greg, do you mind if I just say just one thing? If people are unable to attend on the day, there is a link that maybe you might post on your page.
Yeah.
And that link then, you know, it's all set up and done. you just click the link and an email, then you add your name, you press send, and an email will go to the health minister. And I think the more people that can send that, again, it's sending another message in a different way, but it would be greatly appreciated if people can't attend on the day that they would click the link and send that email for us.
Okay. Edine, look after yourself. Thank you very much.
Thanks
indeed.
So much, Greg.
All right,
thank
bye-bye.
You.
Take care. Edine McDay there, principal of St. Union's National School, and they're doing everything they can. There's an element of it is actually desperation. It's actually desperation because the it was raised in the Dáil by Pat the Cope Gallagher. It was raised in the Dáil by Piers Doherty. It was raised in the Shannon as well. There is no ignoring it. So it's not like people don't know that this is the case. The answer from the HSE, and I'm paraphrasing off the top of my head, was something along the lines that an offer has been made or tender documents, whatever the blooming hell it might be. That has to be bypassed or circumnavigated or whatever it has to be. Look at what we did during COVID, how quickly things were able to happen, legislation rewritten in a moment. This is not legislative, by the way. This is about someone, actually, someone in the Department of Health or the minister themselves saying, how can I collect my wages or how can I go home to my family at night knowing that this is happening and potentially we could do something about it? You know, that's what we need. We need someone with that attitude, whoever it is, to say, right, enough is enough, we need to do something. Right, we have that link, we'll share that out, of course. I would say almost every day, and just following on from our previous conversation, I would say almost every day we speak to people who give up their time, give up their energy for other people, for other causes. Really what I'm saying in a roundabout way, we could almost have a community hero every single day. But there was a gap there, and Highland Radio and the team here came up with the Community Hero Initiative, where annually we get to recognise some of these amazing people that give so selflessly of their energy, their time, their skills, whatever it might be. And you might remember it was launched, I believe, on this show and by our CEO here, Sean Quinn. He's back in studio with me, and it just goes to show, Sean, how quickly things move on. Here we are now unveiling the winners. Firstly, in your words, why this was launched, and then you can sort of lead on to the kind of feedback we got from our listeners.
Yeah, so this is the third year, and I suppose that the whole idea behind it, Greg, was to recognise the people that go unrecognised. And there are so many of them in our communities that do things just because, number one, they want to, they can. But they're there for people when people need them most. And they're never applauded for it. They never look for recognition. And and they do a lot of Trojan work. So it was something that we kind of launched it first, and we gave a car away for the first year, remember, with our partners, iMotors. And from that, it worked. But you give a car, you can take it back. I didn't really like that, to be honest with you. So what we looked and said, let's go and... let's reward these people and for all the work and support that they give others. So, yeah, so this is year three, and it's getting bigger every year. The amount of letters, emails that we got was phenomenal. I had to expand the jury, the judges, because there was just so much to choose from. And we whittled it down. It was very difficult to get down to three. But again, this year it's been phenomenal. The reaction you get from the people that don't have no idea that we're coming through their door, wherever they are, and we do a bit of...
You love the surprise thing. This is worthwhile. Sometimes I think you invent it just for the surprise, but no, there's more to it than this. And we're going to unveil the winners now. And those of you who are loyal Facebook followers and Instagram, etc., would know our first recipient, and that is a man who very richly deserves it, Mr. Martin Orr.
Absolutely. And it's right where we start with Martin, because what Martin has done over the years is phenomenal. And this is not just what he's done this year or last year. He's been doing this for years, that when people are in trouble, what he does and he does best is he brings his music friends together and he creates a concert and he raises thousands of pounds for these people who are in need. And even recently he had one where there was a road traffic accident where there was a young fellow was badly injured. And Martin was there to actually, you know, bring his guys together and do a concert very quickly as well. His turnaround was fairly quick, but he's been doing that for years. And again, he does it with no recognition, doesn't look for it, never has, never will. But we just thought, we got a couple of lovely letters about Martin and what he's done for others. And we thought, you know, this is the right time to do it.
Right. And the right time to do it was as he was doing exactly what Sean has outlined. And it's set up to some extent in the video. But Martin Orr was in Voodoo.
Yep.
Mid-song, it would seem. And, well, our team just went and ambushed him.
We spoiled it.
Call it. Here's the audio. And if you're watching as well, you'll see the video, of course.
Can I just stop you for a second, Martin?
Go ahead.
Have you got a second? How are you?
You're wondering why we're here on a Sunday afternoon. This good man beside us, Martin Orr, has been nominated as a community hero. Maggie McDade plus countless others have written into us to say, you're such a special person. And what you do for people when they're in need, you do what you're good at. You bring your country friends together and you raise thousands and thousands of pounds. So on behalf of all those people and the people in the bar today, let's give a big round of applause for Martin Orr, who is a community hero for Highland Radio for 2026. Gotcha.
You did get me, you got me.
Well, thanks to everybody. I always watch other people doing speeches. They think they'll come into something better than that, but they bloody won't. I understand now why they don't. Well, thanks very much, whoever did that. We do wee things every so often for people that they always ask you to do wee things, and there's always people willing to help. I mean, I've always got a lot of helpers there. A lot of people help me out, so thanks, Sean. I'm stuck here for words.
We've a bit of a good cause for you tonight as well, because we're going to give you €1,000 for you to go and do something for you for a change, whether it's a holiday or a new bike or whatever you want to do. So well done, Mark. Congratulations. Highland Radio Community Award 2026. Fair play to you, buddy.
And I hope he does spend that money on himself. And it's that reaction, really, that what it's all about with these people. He's a great man and doing great things. And fair play to him. Right, so also... there are two others. Should we go to Miss CB next?
Carmel, yeah. So we went down to Dunloe to surprise Carmel in the community hospital, and she was absolutely gobsmacked.
Flabbergasted.
In fact, you'll hear it in a minute when I asked, I was looking for Carmel. She didn't even say she was Carmel. She just sat there. So she had no idea why we were there. But it was lovely because all the nurses and assistants, they all rallied round, and they actually had a lovely bouquet of flowers for her. But she has had an incredible story where, and the full video online we'll explain it later on, but she lost her son four or 5 years ago. He was age 21 in a motor accident. It was obviously tragic, and she had to deal with that. But what she came out of that is, she raised $20,000 for charity to Gemma's Legacy of Hope, which is a counselling service in Dunloe, and also Huey's House in Dublin. So she channeled her energies into that. But also the important thing, the message we got from her colleagues was the work that she does on a daily basis. She goes beyond to help patients. And
well,
it's
what's
fantastic.
Amazing about people like Carmel and that awful loss, the unimaginable loss that she suffered in 2020 with the loss of her beautiful son, you could become self-absorbed. I think I possibly would. I don't even want to put myself in that space. But instead of that, her and her wonderful husband, Declan, and the rest of the family, they went into helping others mode. You know, and it's astonishing. I think it's fantastic. Gemma's Legacy of Hope Counselling Services is amazing. Hughes House in Dublin, that's where people can stay over if their children are receiving treatment in hospital. And then the day-to-day. So she really is an amazing
absolutely.
Person.
And even just by her response, it was... Listen to it now. It's just amazing. Amazing person.
Here's Carmel Bonner getting the surprise of her life.
I'm looking for Carmel. Where's Carmel? Hello, Carmel. How are you? I'm here for a reason today because you're a very special person. And I know a little bit about you because your good friends have written in. And every year we do our Community Hero Awards. And I want to talk to you about that because you've had a bit of a journey, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
And tough times in 2020. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, tough times, as you say, and very
unexpected blow to the family, and devastating blow to the family. We lost Jamie, suddenly, on the 1st of September 2020. I was here working that night and got the call, and life changed dramatically.
Yeah.
But with good family, good friends, I thought I had good work colleagues.
You got through that, didn't you?
Yeah.
But your reaction was incredible, because you found the strength somewhere to go and help others. And that's what you did, because you raised 20,000 euros. Yeah. And where did that go to?
It went to Gemma's Legacy of Hope. Mm. It's a counselling service here. It was just newly opened at the time in Dunloe. And the rest went to Hugh's House in Dublin, where my sister spent, I think, about 10 weeks after her wee girl was born, 13 weeks early.
And I believe from your friends are telling me, told you I knew a lot about you.
My friends? Where are they?
You continue to do what you do on a daily basis for the patients in here. You've got a heart of gold. And that's why today I'm sitting beside you, because you're actually one of Highland Radio's community heroes for 2026.
Oh, my God.
So what we want to do is, we want to give you €1,000 for you. To do what you want to do with it in your own time. And it's people like you, Carmel, that go unrecognised. So today what we're doing is we're recognising the great work that you do, and please continue doing it, because it's you're part of people's life, you make a difference, and you're a very, very special person, and congratulations.
Yes, indeed. And as Sean mentioned there, we're playing out to you shortened versions of the handovers. I don't think, even though you handed her a cheque for €1,000, I don't think you're on Carmel's Christmas card list. Maybe you are, but I'm not sure about her work colleague, Sean.
No, they were fantastic, absolutely fantastic. It's not an easy place to actually to get into the hospital, so she had to keep it very quiet. And so, because the word would have got out very quickly. So it was very touching, and a very special person to do what she's done. And, you know, as I said at the start, Greg, there are countless others like her out there, and we could only pick three. We could have picked 23.
Well, the third is Miss Sooty.
Yes.
Talk to us about Anne-Marie.
So Anne-Marie is a real character, and I would say watch the longer video, because I actually walked past her. I had no idea who she was, but I alluded to that at the start. She's a real Trojan. We went up to Optum to surprise her up there. There was a meeting that was a pretend meeting that they got staff into the office. So she was completely blown away. But she did was laugh. But that's her. That's her reaction. But she has done so much for charity over the years. Really for life, she's been a big, big player in that. She's been part of the Simon community, raising funds for them, the cancer funds. It's amazing what this young girl has done and continues to do. And again, as I said at the start, unrecognised.
And it's another situation whereby people do so much when they're on the clock, and then when they've got time to themselves, they do even more.
Yeah.
And people will know, as you mentioned, Sooty, from her involvement in the organisations that Sean referenced. She helps run the Courtyard Shopping Centre charity shop, and she's always there to help support vulnerable and struggling people through community services. So are you saying we can expect some giggles in this video?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay, here is Sean and the team surprising Anne-Marie Sooty Gallagher.
Hello there, folks. Sorry to interrupt you. Sorry about that. I'm looking for Anne-Marie Gallagher.
Yeah.
Where is she? I have to say now, I wasn't expecting you to be sitting by the door.
Either was I. I tried to get down there.
So the first question I want to ask you is, why do they call you Sooty?
I am not telling you that. Need to know basis, and you don't need to know.
So you can see it's Highland Radio.
I can.
I'm here for a reason.
Are you?
I am, because your friends and colleagues here nominated you for the Community Hero Awards of Highland Radio for 2026. And you know what? We kind of liked what they said.
Don't
so you're
them.
One of this year's winners. So congratulations.
Thanks so much.
Celine, you tell me why you wanted to nominate your good friend for the award.
I'll give you a good example. Sean, we couldn't get her to this room because she was too busy working at Relay for Life. So she is stuck in everything. You'll see her down at St. Patrick's Day with her suit on for the CDP. She works for Pieta House, Kevin Bell Repatriation Trust, everything. She just gives her time so selflessly, and we're so, so proud of her, and we're so lucky to have her in our community.
So as one of our heroes, okay, we have a business person that helps us every year. We are actually giving you €1,000 for you. No. So you can go and spend on you for whatever you want to do with it, go on a holiday, whatever you want to do. Wow. But that's for you to take time out, recharge the batteries, because I'm sure thereafter you're going to do the exact same again, aren't you?
100%. You know I am.
Ladies and gentlemen, our community hero for 2026. Congratulations,
so
Anne-Marie Sooty Gallagher.
Wonderful lady, wonderful recognition. Congratulations, Anne-Marie Sooty Gallagher, Carmel Boner, and also Mr. Martin Orr. Brilliant videos. It's a mixture of what the hell are you doing to me, plus you can see when the penny drops and the emotions begin as well too, because these people are so unassuming, they just don't ever think something like this is going to happen. And that's it for another year, and no doubt it will be back next year, Sean.
It will be, and I just wanted to take this a second to thank the business person that helps me on an annual basis, helps us.
This is worse than the secret sound. This, can we guess? No. Roll over a tenner a day.
No, and
they don't want. They don't want recognition.
They don't want recognition.
They just
want to
help.
And I've another. Just I'm going to leave a little teaser here, but I met with them a couple of weeks ago, and I have a really special thing we're going to do later in the year, and I'm so excited by it.
Yeah, and this is special. And as we get closer to the end of the year, it'll be more obvious as to how special it is. Okay.
Yeah.
Right, Sean, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Greg.
Well done to you and the team. Lovely videos. The longer videos are available on our socials now, actually. I see they've been posted.
They've put them up, yeah. So have a look at them. And once again, thanks to everybody that got behind it, helped us to make it happen, because surprises are everything. So, and before you know it, we'll be back next year.
And share the videos, and share your love under the videos as well too, because it will reach them as well. Sean, thanks very much indeed. That's the CEO here, Sean Quinn. Well done, Carmel. Well done, Anne-Marie. And well done, Martin. Three amazing people. And as I say, you know, we have so many amazing people in this beautiful region of ours, and that's why it's going to have to come back next year to recognise more of them. Right, listen, thank you so much for all of your comments coming out throughout the course of the day. We were talking about active travel and the driving test. Greg was wondering yesterday what would happen the day of your driving test with the recent lane closures in Letterkenny. I set the coach licence some years ago and I failed because there was an obstruction in my way. The reality is that if you break away from the rules of the road, you will fail the test. So thanks so much for that. And the question really was, is, you know, we heard yesterday that HGV drivers are saying that they have to encroach into oncoming traffic, or they will have to, when this new roundabout down by the hospital is completed. And I'm saying, well, if you're sitting your test and it happens to be on that route, would you fail? And according to this listener, you would. So we're designing roads, are we, that could force you to fail your test. Can you please give again the name of the podcast that's going to be released at 11 o'clock? I can't seem to find it on Spotify. Search Greg Hughes or The Greg Hughes Show. We are there. Now, the weekly podcast is in with the day podcast, right? So we've Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of this show. And then each Friday, there's The Greg Hughes Podcast. So just search that out on Spotify and you'll find us there. But it doesn't go live until 11, so you won't see it until 11. If you have any other issues with that, please let me know, because if there's anything I need to do to improve visibility of that, I would like to. Greg, the place where they put the electric bikes in Letterkenny, which is down behind a bank there, is not suitable at all, says the listener. The first time I saw them, I thought to myself, what a terrible place to put them, as it's basically on the side of a hill. Electric bikes can take a wee while to get used to and would need a level place with plenty of space, like the Tesco car park, to get a wee practice run. Where they are now, if you go one direction, you're trying to go uphill past the old courthouse. If you go the other way, down towards the Pierce Road and traffic. Whoever decided to put them there has obviously never ridden an electric bike. We heard from Donal Mandy Kelly yesterday, the councillor, that as far as he's aware, they've never been used in all the time they've been there. That's where we have to leave it. Have a fantastic weekend, and I look forward to already returning to the airwaves Monday morning from 9 a.m.